listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded January 21st, 2026. While daily America resembles more the totalitarian states of the last century than the beacon of liberty it once represented to the world's tired, hungry, and huddled masses, as shocking as that truth is, as revealed in myriad cell phone videos of ICE brutality performed in places like Minnesota and everywhere else its thugs are deployed, it can't be a surprise. America's drift towards fascism has been foretold by marginalized and some more mainstream media voices for at least as long as Kennedy's assassination, and anchored further in George W. Bush's post-9/11 reforms, but so much for history. Now, the marginal voices are being systematically muted by concentrated internet corporations, while legacy press outlets like once-vaunted CBS News are swallowed whole by the defenders of genocide abroad and destruction of the American way at home. Jim Kavanaugh is a former college professor come online Cassandra, publishing his political and social analysis at The Polemicist on Substack. His articles, too, appear on occasion at the Grenville Post and Counterpunch, among other places. Jim Kavanaugh in the first half. And if Americans wonder why their domestic political dissent doesn't garner more international calls for unity and support, as after the 9/11 attacks of 2001, perhaps it's due to global schadenfreude, a collective sense of America getting back some of what it's dished out. Few enjoy seeing the poorest of Americans targeted for collective punishment at the hands of racists, more properly belonging in Dixie in another century, but when considering the horrors committed by it in the last decades. Andy Worthington is an English journalist, activist, author, photo historian, filmmaker, musician, songwriter, and principal of the Four Fathers Band. He is, too, a co-founder of the ongoing Close Guantanamo campaign. His book titles include The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison, Stonehenge, Celebration and Subversion, and The Battle of the Beanfield. Andy's articles appear at andyworthington.co.uk, where I found his recent piece, Photos and Report, 19 Global Vigils for the Closure of Guantanamo on the 24th anniversary of the prison's opening. In it, he writes, quote, between Saturday, January 10th and Monday, January 12th, an impressive 18 vigils for the closure of the War on Terror prison at Guantanamo Bay took place across the U.S. and around the world. Andy Worthington and America's 21st century Devil's Island in the second half. But first, Jim Kavanaugh and dismantling the Bill of Rights one amendment at a time. Welcome back to the show, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Jim, you know, it seems the rest of the world now has joined Canada's national pastime in gape-mouthed America watching. As an American down there in the Big Apple, can you help we outside your borders understand just what the hell is going on down there?
Well, I got to tell you, my mouth is as agape as yours. It is astounding. We're in the middle internally of a crisis that, you know, the most dramatic manifestation of which is what's going on in Minnesota with ICE, which is just an out of control police force that Trump has put together with no accountability. I mean, J.D. Vance is actually saying they have absolute immunity. You know, they're going around under the guise, the thin and dishonest guise of going after illegal aliens. They're just going after anybody they can find. And they're ramming cars and dragging people out of cars and dragging people out of their homes, people who are American citizens, people who are legal residents of the United States, who've been here for decades with families and jobs. And they are, it's a demonstration of a police state power that is going to increase. And that's what Trump, this is about intimidating American citizens, intimidating everybody. And, but it's part of this larger ethic of might makes right that Trump is, you know, enforcing on the world with Venezuela and now with Greenland, and it's coming to you, Canada. So there's this sense that, and we have a problem in the United States, that being legally and constitutionally defining the limits of executive power. And we have a problem in the United States, most importantly, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a problem of the political culture in the United States. Whatever the Congress, whatever powers the Congress has, they're not using them. You know, the Democratic Party is not willing to go to the mat over these things because they've created a lot of them. I mean, it was, you know, Joe Biden who created this whole thing of domestic dissent as being domestic terrorism, you know, identifying protest as domestic terrorism. And it was Obama who and Biden who, you know, increased the funding of ICE, and Obama appointed this guy Holman who's a thug and awarded him. So there's a lot of problems that, you know, have been simmering and going on under the surface with nicer rhetoric behind them and with less blatant cruelty and authoritarianism, but they've been going on. And the question is, can American political culture get to a point somehow where it really begins to resist these things and turn them around? And I'm, you know, not optimistic about it. Look, it's the same thing. Your prime minister is prime minister.
Hey, don't drag us into this.
No, I'm dragging you. You're in it, baby. Like it or not, we're dragging you in.
Dragging us down. Well, Jim, the idea that that the Congress isn't going to help. I mean, we've seen with foreign policy for a very long time that Congress hasn't performed its mandated role in being the check and balance against the unified, the unitary authority of the presidency when it comes to war fighting abroad. Is this a case then of the empire coming home and people at home now, as I mentioned in the introduction, beginning to taste a little of what America has served up abroad?
That's exactly what it is. You know, the Congress was serious. You know, I read this thing yesterday in the New York Times. America's damn Donald Trump is turning America into an imperialist power. Oh, really? You know, because this is the first time since the Philippines that the United States has actually tried to acquire territory, you know, officially. Yeah, but it's been like 50 times since then when they've taken control of foreign governments by regime change and by running the country from the American embassy, you know, and running it according to American dictates. And, you know, that's what your prime minister said yesterday. But anyway, I'm saying is that yeah, so now that's coming home. And so if there were opposition in Congress to, let's say, the blatant, illegal, criminal kidnapping of the head of state of a foreign government, you know, Nicolas Maduro, Venezuela, the Democrats in Congress would be getting up and saying, when we come to power, we are going to drop charges against Maduro and send him home. You know, they're not going to say that. This is they are the ones. Barack Obama is the one who identified Venezuela as an extraordinary threat to our national security. That's baloney, but that's what. So Trump is working on the logic that's everybody's been accepting. And if they were doing something for real now, they would be saying, when we come to power, we're going to shut down CECOT. We're going to shut it down, you know, period. We're going to shut down Alcatraz. We're going to not have. These are also. The nasty thing about these things, these are private prisons, you know, people, there's a financial incentive to put as many people to arrest as, that's why they don't care. They get credit for arresting them for a week or for 10 days and throw them in jail. And they're getting money. There's people making money off of that.
Well, there's a systemic money grab here. I read with wry amusement of a Latino man in the States that was working for ICE that was arrested the other day. And even though he was saying, hey, wait a minute, guys, I'm one of you, I'm ICE. They did that, whatever, you know, shut up. And they chucked him in and he went through the prison cycle. And each time these prisoners get passed from hand to hand, from place to place, which is why they often end up thousands of miles away from where they were arrested. Somebody is making, you know, getting a cut out of this deal. It's a racket. It's a whole racket. Well, Jim, you write at your website, The Polemicist, up at, and again, Jim's site, Jim Kavanaugh's site is up at Substack, Jim Kavanaugh, The Polemicist, and also on Twitter. And I'm looking at your Twitter page right now, and you've got a pinned tweet of your article, Collapse. It is a ship of fools and it's sinking that you wrote earlier last year. In it, you say, and I'll quote you, that Donald Trump is destroying the American economy and the American empire. You add, it is the collapse of the post-World War II U.S.-dominated world order of the American and Western Euro-Atlantic project to core and of all pretenses regarding it. Now, this does cover some of the themes of our prime minister, Goldman Sachs, or as he's known colloquially, Mark Carney, in his speech to his pals at Davos at the World Economic Forum that's causing such a stir. As some very intelligent people I see that write on Twitter and stuff are very enheartened by the speech. I'm, because he's our prime minister, we all look at our own politicians with a much more jaundiced eye, I think, than people abroad. But I'm curious to know how his speech is being received in the United States. You know some of it, at least. Did you see the whole speech or just clips of it? Or
I read the whole speech. And
oh, okay, great. I'm fascinated to hear your take on, is this a defining moment, a turn in history of the empire and so forth, as some are building it up to be?
Well, rhetorically, it certainly is. Look, this is one of us, one of them, you know, one of the, he's certainly, as you say, a member of the club. And he's saying, we all knew this was a fiction. We all knew this was hypocritical. We all knew these rules, the rules-based order applied to certain countries and not others. And we went along with it because it was to our benefit. And they knew they were going along with the United States. Like the prime minister of Belgium the other day said, well, to be happy, happy servants is what wasn't servants. It was another word to use. Happy servants is one thing. To be slaves is another. In other words, we recognized that we were happy servants to the American empire for the past, 40 years, 30 years. But now you're asking us to be slaves. And that's a little over the line for us. So what your prime minister was saying is the whole game that we pretended we were playing, which we knew was a pretense, we knew was fake and a fiction, as he called it. And it's a rupture with it now. It's not a transition, it's a rupture. We're out of that game. And certainly, I think it's after 2 years of Gaza, it's impossible for anybody in the West who supported that and went along with that to get up and pretend that they represent some kind of virtuous democracy or human rights or international law. They don't give a damn about international law. He said that, he acknowledged it, that's good. And what's happening, it's good that someone says it. I mean, you can't unsay it. Now, it can be ignored and it will be ignored to as much as possible, but we now have them on the record saying it. And, all of this is, and what Trump is doing is so blatant and so crude and so obvious that even his pals, the members of this club that have been his faithful servants for a long time, have to now say it. And that changes the game as he said in his speech, given the example, if everybody, the game depends on everybody pretending that they believe it. And once someone gets up and says, no, this is not true, the game is fake, then it's a problem. Okay. Especially if it's someone who's part of the leadership of the game as he is. That's undermined. I just want to give this quote that I love that I quoted. I may have quoted it in that collapse piece, but I quoted in one of my articles before. It was Michael Hudson in Trump's first term, who said the following, and this is true, I think. No left-wing party, no socialist, anarchist, or foreign nationalist leader anywhere in the world could have achieved what Trump is doing to break up the American empire. And that is the situation that Trump does not understand the level at which soft power and the ability to get away with the pretense that you're in favor of rules and international law is power. And if you give that up, and you throw it in the garbage, you're going to be in a very bad position ultimately.
Well, yeah, he uses our Prime Minister Carney the parable of the grocer's the grocer's parable or something from Vaclav Havel, which I thought was irksome personally that he would be criticizing socialism.
Yeah, I know.
He begins by criticizing socialism and workers of the world unite. What a preposterous thing to believe in. Okay, well, that, and to me, that showed his colors so that all else follows. It seemed, though, to me, his speech did that. It was this sort of render unto Caesar. Oh, well, you know, that. And if the emperor, if someone points out the emperor is naked and the emperor just swings his dick anyway, then, you know, that's all the more power to the emperor. And I think that's what we're going to, when it comes to dick swinging, I think that your Donald Trump is probably the world champ at that, like so many other things. But in that article, I mentioned a collapse. You say that Donald Trump is destroying the American economy and he's destroying the American empire. This sounds purposeful. There's a feeling being expressed online in many places that the blatant criminality that ICE is displaying is meant to incite reaction, to incite a reaction powerful enough for the White House to justify enacting the Insurrection Act. Do you think, can you explain what the Insurrection Act is to those who don't know, especially outside of America, and if you, what credence you give this theory?
Well, yeah, the Insurrection Act allows, it's from like 1807, I think, or something. And yeah, it allows the president to use military troops in the United States. There's what's called the Posse Comitatus Act, which forbids the use of the American army against American citizens. But this allows for exceptions to it. When there's an insurrection, when there's a real rebellion, okay? And now, whatever's happening in Minnesota is not a rebellion against the American capitalist state or the American regime, political regime in general. It's not what it is. It's a protest against ICE policies. again, this is the problem. That law is on the books. It's kind of at the will or whim or judgment of the president to decide what's an insurrection or not. And unless there's a pushback from the Congress, and this has to be at this point, you have to have impeachment proceedings brought against Trump, and you're not going to succeed in that. And the Democrats impeached him. Nobody even remembers what they impeached him for. They played that game before in a phony way, and now they're afraid to play it, and they don't really have the power to play it anyway in a real way. So it's a very big problem. And this is, I think, a lot of people, I don't know Trump himself, but I think a lot of people around Trump, I think Stephen Miller's, they would like to see, yes, they want to create chaos and they want to create a conflict that's going to escalate. You know, the Black Panther Party is back in Philadelphia and other places, and they're getting out there on the street with their guns. So this is going to, you know, and they're going to escalate this. And it's a problem for me. And because I tweeted out, I think there should be 10 armed citizens for every ICE agent that comes into town. Okay. Standing on the street with arms, keeping them honest, saying we're here to watch. That's what the Black Panthers did. That's exactly what they did. And, but at any rate, at this point, you know, they're so out of hand and people are so angry. It's very likely something bad has already happened. They shot someone in the face. They shot some woman in the face. You know what I mean? This was terrible. And there was no justification for it. Someone's going to strike back at them. And the Stephen Millers and Donald Trump's won't mind if that happens. And they will try to use it to send in. They've got 1,500 troops ready to go, they say, either to Greenland or to Minneapolis. And again, but this is again, the Democrats who made that video saying soldiers must disobey illegal orders, which is true. Okay. Now they have to say what illegal orders soldiers must disobey. They must disobey illegal orders to go into Minnesota. They must obey illegal orders to kidnap the president of Venezuela. They must disobey illegal orders to go to take over Greenland. So they got to get up and start saying these things and create a political crisis for Donald Trump and his administration before you get to the shooting crisis that's probably going to happen on the streets.
Well, I feel for the confusion of the ICE guys. I mean, knowing that they're not all the sharpest icicles on the eve, that they're being given countermanding or confusing orders, that they're committing illegal acts, clearly, but they're being told that to commit these illegal acts is okay and that they won't be held accountable. So, I mean, the confusion must be palpable in their lunchrooms and so forth. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jim Kavanaugh. Jim's a former college professor. He's also publishing his political and social analyses at the Polemicist on Substack. You can find him under that name, too, at Twitter as well. His articles appear on occasion at the Grenville Post and Counterpunch, among other places. We're talking today about America, whither, I guess I should say, Jim, whither the America that we thought we knew, as Mark Carney said, it's all an illusion or something, or he made allusion to that. He made allusion to that effect. Jim, the idea of Make America Great Again, of course, isn't Donald Trump's invention. He copied it like so many other things he does. But what I'm interested in is the idea of political revivalism that underpins it. At least I think it underpins it, whether he's aware of it or not, this idea of going back to a greater time. It seems that, the calendar keeps slipping further and further back. So now we're in sort of a pre-Civil War time, it seems to be the choice, a time when white men ruled and there was a lot more elbow room, you know, in America.
Oh, yeah. Look, this is, again, another fiction, you know, the golden age of America. Well, when was that, you know? Was that back before we still had Jim Crow and black people were being lynched in the South? That's my lifetime that was happening. Okay. You know, I lived through that. I saw it happen. This is bizarre. You know, you want to go back to that? You want to go back to the time when there's been no worse genocide in history than that of the Native Americans? The largest mass execution in American history was of Native Americans by Abraham Lincoln. So, you know, even American heroes, you know, this is, we have a spotted history. We, you know, every country has crimes in its history, almost practically every country, certainly every big country. So, you know, you've got to have intellectual and historical honesty about this. We have to know what our history is, you know, and we have to not deny it and not wallow in guilt about it. That's not the point either. But the point is, you got to understand what you, and to create this comic book fiction of some golden age where everything was great. No, there really never was that. And we shouldn't think that was. There was. And we have to move forward and create for ourselves a better society that's better than it is now, certainly. You know, you have 34 people in the country that own like 40% of the wealth. That's absurd. And that's power. That's political power. So all of these things have to be looked at. This is, again, this is part of this. Donald Trump didn't originate this. And, you know, but he certainly plays the game very well. We're going to go back to the golden age and make America great again. Let's make America as great as it can be for real and recognize, you know, the good things we've done and the bad things we've done. And there's a lot of both. And, you know, most of the good things were fights, were the results of struggles against Jim Crow, against the McCarthyism, against things like this. You know, you have to understand what created the good things we have and move forward with that. But this is what I'm saying. The political culture of the United States is terrible. And that's the result of the fact that the political education for Americans comes mostly for TV and now social media. Social media is actually better, but, you know, from mainstream media, from Fox News and MSNBC and the Wall Street Journal and The Wire and the New York Times, and they have an agenda, and they've played that agenda very well. So most Americans are historically ignorant, frankly, you know, and certainly Donald Trump is. I mean, and, you know, they don't, and with all the power that we have and exercise in the world, we don't have the right to be that ignorant and to exercise power on the basis of that ignorance. And that's the problem we have. It's a huge problem. It's not going to be solved by electing a Democrat. And now there are, I think, so the internet and alternative media and social media like this and media like this, people have access to information and analyses they didn't have. We saw that happen very quickly over 2 years with Israel, with after October 7th. People who knew nothing about Israel or Zionism learned about it by, first of all, seeing it in action, and then having access to voices and analyses which told them the historical truth about Zionism and Israel that really shocked people and made them understand that for 80 years we've been putting up with something that's absolutely outrageous and there's no place for it in the modern world. And so these are the things that we, you know, everybody, we need we need better political education and political culture in the United States. And it's, you know, going to be hard to find. Again, since we started last, we're talking about doing the show about, you know, the capture of the new capture of the media by Larry Ellison and people on CBS and Barry Weiss. So they're going to try and they are. They're trying to. They're buying up mainstream media and they're buying up social media. They can buy up social media influencers very easily. And so that's not, it's not like that. That space is anything that's immune from being captured by the ruling class and the Zionists and the capitalists. So that's the situation we're in. It's tough. It's tough.
Well, yeah. And when you say that most Americans are educated, you know, by watching the screen, one screen or another screen, the fact that the takeover by Ellison and the Oracle chieftain that you describe of CBS, which was sort of, I mean, I don't want to lionize them because I thought their reporting in last, especially at 60 Minutes over the last years has been really terrible propaganda, yeah. especially on like Syria and Russia and stuff. But yep. But seeing this Barry Weiss character who is responsible, I think, solely for inciting the murder of the Palestinian poet Arir, be elevated into this position. And I mean, it just seems to be that the scum is rising to the top in today's America. Yeah. I don't know if that's always, maybe it's always been like that. And my glasses have been rose colored. We're fast running out of time, Jim, but I want to talk to just before we go, we can maybe circle around to Canada. Canada has been threatened. We were threatened immediately when Trump took office. And there was a lot of talk this time last year about Canada becoming the 51st state and so forth. Now we're not even going to be the 51st state. now we got to stand in line with no goods like Greenland. I mean, what the hell? But there's also a more serious threat against Mexico, even talk of military assaults against Mexico, because their president had the temerity to stand with Venezuela, something that ours certainly wouldn't do. But well, in his couched way, you know, we said, well, we never really recognized that guy was a real president. So, you know, invading him in his underwear and killing 100 people is not really such a bad thing. This is our paragon of leadership that people are putting faith in around the world right now. But what are your thoughts on really the disruption of any kind of North American unity that previous presidents in the last 25, 35 years have worked pretty hard to create a solid North American bloc? And now this infant in the White House seems, and the people behind him, I can't let them off the hook, seems to be trammeling.
Look, I have a nice place in my heart for Canada. My son lives there. And it's been, I mean, it's been a non-entity. The idea of some kind of conflict with Canada has been a non-entity precisely because the Canadian government has been, as the European governments are, even more so, a loyal lapdog of the United States. And there's no question that it ever would be anything else. So why are you going after it? I mean, it's very silly. It is an obsession of Trump's. It doesn't make any sense, even from a kind of self-interested geopolitical point of view. I don't know what's going to happen with it. Clearly, you know, what your guy said yesterday indicates there's a break and there's a rupture. But on the other hand, he turned around and accepted this offer to be on this absolutely disgraceful board of peace that Trump is trying to gin up as a colonial protectorate of the for Gaza, and also maybe as the substitute for the UN. Trump even said that the other day.
Well, Norman Finkelstein said that this puts Gaza into the Trump portfolio is all that this whole board of peace talk does. And I see today that Netanyahu has joined the peace board.
Tell Carney, you know, you gave this nice speech about how this is ruptured and this is over now. But what are you doing then? This is the icing on the cake of this fake fiction of a rules-based order, this board of peace stuff. So, look, this is the problem every country has now, because they want to resist this. Even the, you know, your prime minister and the European, they want to figure out a way to resist this. But they've weakened themselves so much, and the Europeans have disarmed themselves and destroyed their economies with the Ukraine thing at the behest of the United States. And now the United States doesn't care, walking away from it. So they weaken themselves so much. What are they going to do? How are you going to fight it? Do you really want to fight it? Well, the best thing Europe could do, your guy did. I did see your guy made a deal with China. That's the way to do it, is to say, okay, we're going to make deals with Russia and China.
And Trump was sanguine with that. He says, of course they should make deals with China. And that poor reporters were standing there with their zippers undone. Jim, we got to go. That's all the time we got for today. Again, Jim Kavanaugh, you can find him at The Polemicist on Substack, and you can see his ex Twitter feed, The Polemicist, Jim Kavanaugh, as well. Thanks a lot, Jim, for coming on again. And everybody else, stay tuned. I'm going to take a break. I'll be back with Andy Worthington from Jolly Old in London to talk about Gitmo and some other stuff, too. Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.